to say that free speech is the only important thing leaves us with this other thing, which is that who's going to be willing to engage in this government if we don't guarantee a safe space for people to engage in a productive way?
I think this goes at the heart of civility, giving the citizen their time uninterrupted. That's civil, and that's very civil on your part as an assembly person to sit there and take it.
You're about to listen to the next edition of Lynn Canal Voice, where Doug Olrude and I bring in Mayor Tom Morfitt, Assemblymember Kevin Forster, and resident Mike Dinker to discuss civil discourse and free speech in public life. Dinker, who has great interest in studying the First Amendment, has weighed in on free speech issues in local politics in the past. We brought him in to discuss Mayor Morfitt's decision to disallow a resident from speaking during public comment at the January 23rd Assembly meeting. Forster is on the Assembly's Government Affairs and Services Committee, members of which on February 6th discussed a proposed anti-bullying policy and how such a policy butts up against the First Amendment. I recommend anyone interested in these issues listen to that meeting, which generated some great insights and conversation about free speech and civil discourse. The discussion starts about an hour into the meeting. In our discussion, the group decided to not use specific names. I was split on this decision because I think it makes the discussion needlessly vague and can make it harder to address specific points. On the other hand, I can understand how not using names has the potential to help listeners judge what happened for themselves based on principles rather than personalities. In any case, if you're unaware of what happened, Morfitt disallowed a resident to speak during public comment. That resident has, in past meetings, expressed criticism of an assembly member for reaching out to a federal agency. The assembly member disputed the resident's characterization of what happened, and on January 23rd, the resident was attempting to correct the record based on their understanding of events the night he was gaveled down. The five of us talk about whether the resident's First Amendment rights were violated, what type of speech is appropriate during public comment, the merits of a proposed anti-bullying policy, and about how we engage with each other in public life more broadly. We did invite both parties to join us and weigh in. Both declined. There's no judgment here. They each had their own understandable reasons for declining to participate. Anyway, I hope you enjoy the discussion. I think we all could agree here that we want to improve civil discourse in Haynes. I think the question is how we do it. Does it come from an ordinance, a policy, or does it come from trying to persuade people to do it better? I think that really is the heart of what we're discussing today. So let's introduce sort of, I guess we could start by talking about what happened on Tuesday. Tom, you gaveled a member of the public during public comment. Explain your reasoning.
Well, one thing is that public comment is not open mic. If a person gets up there and starts reading the Iliad for 3 minutes, and another person gets up there and starts reading the Iliad for 3 minutes, and there's no, right now, we don't cap how long people, how many people can talk. We could be all night listening to the Iliad. So, you know, I think there are certain parameters on public comment that we've tried to enforce in an informal way. We ask people not to take public comment, I mean, to address the issue and not the person. We ask people to be civil. We ask them not to speak in an angry tone. And then the chair gets a gavel to try to referee that. I understand free speech law, but the question is, I have 3.5 hours to, you know, to get a meeting done. So, you know, there's any number of ways that people can booby trap the government. And if we're trying to booby trap the government, you know, the public has a way to do that. Democracies are fragile. They rest on a certain amount of civility. They rest on a certain amount of mutual respect. And it's a little, it's kind of a dance between the public and its leaders that we do all the time. And if that dance, if one of the partners doesn't want to play or you know, that or make that, do that dance, I guess, in a civil way, we've got a problem.
Okay, thanks. We're going to move on to Mike Dinker, who's here to discuss why he thinks that, well, he's going to discuss free speech issues in respect to this issue. So go ahead, Mike.
I'm going to kind of represent
some little bit different perspectives on possibly what Tom said, and I'm really looking forward to hearing what the rest of you all say as well. Tom is correct. In the public comment periods during meetings are not open free speech. There are different forums, historical forums in our society. So we have traditional public forums, which are like sidewalks and parks. And sidewalks and parks are like free speech holy land. That is where it is uninhibited, robust debate on anything. However, the public comment period in meetings is not a traditional public forum. It's a limited public forum. It's limited by the government based on time, place, and manner. So what time the public can speak, how long they can speak, and also what topics they can speak on, as Tom rightly said, that you can't just speak about anything. I could go to an assembly meeting, and I could start talking, hey, I'd like to talk about the Bills versus the 49ers. Man, that was a great game. We can't do that. That's not what it's there for. However, it is there for public debate, public comment on matters of public concern, dealing with that with our borough. And that's what our borough has instituted with the 3-minute public comment period. So matters of public concern are open. And I know we are, in the interest of civility, I love it, dealing with issues, put an issue on the table and let's all address the issue and deal with that issue correctly and disagree correctly. However, when it comes to public comment in a limited public forum, once the government has set that the parameters there, that the time, place, and manner, you have to have a compelling government interest to gavel someone down, and any kind of regulations on that has to be narrowly tailored. And this is how the Supreme Court issues and the Supreme Court cases, compelling government interest that is narrowly tailored on a borough interest. With interest here would be we like civility and all this, but also you can't be disorderly, disruptive, and you can't make personal attacks that threaten someone. Now I'm going to represent a little bit different position, specifically with names. There are times when mentioning someone's name is appropriate, an assembly person's name, in my belief. In the issue that we just had the other day, outside of any history before this specific issue, I have just listened to this public comment at this meeting on the audio. And there was no disorderly conduct that I could tell based on the audio. And at the minute a name was mentioned, an assembly person's name was mentioned, I heard the gavel come down twice. I have a problem with that as a citizen. First off, I don't know what the person was going to say, so I don't have any idea. There may have been, based on some history, there may have been comments that were going to be made that were addressing the public record from the previous meeting. Now, I, as a citizen, not coming into this from the outside, I'm seeking truth here. And this is what we're trying to do, seeking truth. The public record may have been an issue here. I would like to hear both sides and then try to determine for myself where the truth is. Gaveling someone down prior to them making that statement did not allow me the information that I possibly need. And I was really bristled a little bit by the comments between the mayor and the vice mayor when it said, I don't think this should be aired publicly. I have a real problem with that, First Amendment-wise. Putting these kind of matter of the public record, potentially, and keeping that out of the public. So that's kind of where I'm going to come from it. I understand the civility aspects. I understand not mentioning names, but there are times when the public record is being addressed, that if an assembly member said something, I, as a citizen coming into it blind, would need to know which assembly person said it. I need to know what. So there, I think there are times when it is appropriate.
Okay, thanks, Mike. And then we have Kevin Forster here. He's also an assembly member. He's going to speak about his opinion on this issue as well. Go ahead and introduce yourself and what you think about all this.
Well, thanks for taking the time to talk about this. I think, like, so many issues going on, allowing different viewpoints in the same room with some civility is the only way to move forward. So thanks all y'all for taking the time for this. Yeah, I think this particular issue is in this particular instance is a valuable one because there is so much gray area. And as someone who was sitting in the room, not only during this meeting, but during previous meetings, I know that I've had some inner conflict in regards to the way that both sides of this have gone. I totally see the need to allow for free speech and for people to speak out against their government in a public venue is of paramount importance. I also think that it's incredibly important that we create that particular space and that forum as a safe space for the people who are engaging. And whilst, as Mike here has said, that, you know, listening to that particular meeting, when you hear the name come out, it certainly didn't feel like there was any aggression or uncivil context. I believe, and had I been the mayor, I'm not exactly sure how I would have dealt with that. I do know that when the name came out, I was triggered also. And the reason that I was triggered is because in the previous two meetings, there was a build of actions and events that, from my perspective, and it's difficult not being the one on the receiving end, from my perspective, were intimidating, were... when the individual leaves crying, it shows that there is some intimidation factor going on here. And so while I don't think I'm going to defend or come against the actions that were there, I think that a lot of this is nuance. And whilst I think it's really important that we talk about the issue that was brought up and the potentiality of settling scores within the public record, the way that not only the public comment, but the way that then the public comment interfaces with communications during breaks and after meetings, the way that that all builds needs to be safe for everybody in the room. And to say that the free speech is the only important thing leaves us with this other thing, which is that who's going to be willing to engage in this government if we don't guarantee a safe space for people to engage in a productive way. So whether or not this individual should have been gaveled under this specific circumstance is hard to say because, like other people have brought up, now it's a subjective matter. We haven't created a definitive code of ethics that is hung on the wall that is exactly the way that we've all agreed that this is how it's going to work, like a lot of communities have. And so it is a subjective matter, and it leaves it open for discussion. As soon as if we were to embark upon a policy of a code of ethics for this particular venue, at least there would be more of an objective basis for making a decision on gaveling a person or not.
So this is Doug Olrud, and I just want to kind of touch on what you guys said, but maybe take it in a different direction. I had 3 years of dealing with this in Mayor Morfitt's seat, and this isn't just a one-off. This isn't just a few personalities. This happens quite often in public service in Haines. And looking at it over the years growing up here, being here, Ike, one of the underlying issues for me is we make assumptions about other people's motives very quickly in this community. If somebody says something we disagree with, we're going to put the worst possible motives. We're going to assume the worst possible motives, that they're doing this because they don't like me. They want to shut my job down. They don't want my type of people here. And I heard it from every angle over the last 3 years. I'd have people in the office tell me those people don't deserve to live in Haines and they need to move. So I don't care about their opinion. And it was from both the right and the left on different issues. And so I think getting past those assumptions of what somebody's reasoning is and being able to sit down and having a conversation about why people feel that way one of the things I've appreciated these last couple months have been able to have a couple conversations with Kevin. And we've been able to discuss things that are going on with the borough. From my experience dealing with them the last 3 years, where those things are at right now and the information Kevin's having, and we're able to have a really good dialogue about that. We might not come away agreeing with each other's position, but we're willing to sit down and have that conversation, have a better understanding on why each of us is in the area that we are. And so I think there is a lot of assumption, judgment, emotion that gets behind a lot of these topics. And not everybody, I would say very few of us, have had the training or had the experience to recognize that emotions, recognizing those assumptions, recognizing that judgment that we have in ourselves towards others, and taking a step back and what is the best way for me to address this difference of opinion I have with somebody? How do we model that in our community? How do we provide those resources in the community where we can all get better at that? Because for me, over the years from being on the Assembly, Planning Commission, Mayor, the ones that were the worst bullies for me are the ones that were the most, it wasn't the people that got up and were screaming. A lot of it was the written word. Because there's some people that can be very effective with the written word that you can see the passive-aggressive tone, the underline. And that is equally as harmful as somebody that has a physical intimidation or somebody that's just loud and really vocal about a subject. And having conversations with some of those people that made those comments, they don't look at it that same way. And also when I would bring up to people that have brought conversations about bullying, and I've asked them about their support of different individuals that I thought engaged in bullying, they would turn it around and said, well, the target of that person, well, they're a strong person, they can handle that. Or because of their position, they had this position, so they should expect that when they get it. And it goes both ways. Well, you're an Assembly person, you should be ready to be beat up. You're the mayor, you should be ready to beat up. You're representing X company, you signed up for this, whatever happens, happens. That's not a way to have a good civil society. We have to be able to talk to each other through difficult conversations without getting to that emotional level where we're attacking each other.
I want to ask a question here. So, yeah, like Doug, what you just described, I think most of us agree on that. But I think the real question is First Amendment rights and free speech rights and what that means concretely in terms of why do they exist? I think, based on my understanding, and I think Mike can speak to this, is that you're going to put up, because the way that this whole principle is designed, is that there's going to be false speech. There's going to be offensive speech. There's going to be lies. And some of that is protected because it provides a forum for the marketplace of ideas. Like, there's bad products and there's good products, and ideas fall into that category. So can we talk concretely about why these principles matter and how they intersect with how we talk to one another? Mike?
You bet. So I just let you know that I'm not a lawyer, but I have spent over a decade studying First Amendment and 14th Amendment constitutional law as it applies to citizens' interaction with their local government. I think that's a hole that needs to be filled in all small communities. I'm by no means an expert here, but I try my best anyway. So the First Amendment, a lot of the with regard to expression, in its core of the First Amendment, free expression, is political speech. That's recognized as the core, along with religion. The ability for us to hold beliefs within ourselves, whether they're religious or political, and then to be able to express those beliefs. So that is the core of the First Amendment. So when we're talking about that in this context, in a limited public forum such as public comment, there are cases that have been at the Supreme Court that have looked at all of these ideas and with regard to public figures and how that interaction, and there are like one of them is New York Times versus Sullivan. One of the things that they said, the Supreme Court said there is profound. There's a profound national commitment to the principle that debate on public issues should be uninhibited, robust, and wide open. And furthermore, they said this debate may well include unpleasantly sharp attacks on government and public officials. Now, that's kind of the context of the First Amendment, how the Supreme Court has litigated some of these things in the past, that it can be spirited debate, and it can mention people and have sharp attacks associated with those. I think we all here again, there's a balance, I think, between civility and the First Amendment. I don't think they're mutually exclusive or inclusive, but I think, you know, we can't throw the baby out with the bathwater here, in my opinion. In this particular instance, I believe, and here again, I'm coming at this, I know there's some context that Kevin mentioned, and possibly Tom can reference. There may be some context that I'm not aware of outside of the meeting. And but in this context, listening to the public comment, I found it inappropriate. I found the gavel inappropriate based on this particular instance, simply because something was going to be said that I think that me as a citizen I needed to know, and I don't know that it was going to be an attack. I don't know that it was. I don't know what it was, and that's that restraining that comment prior to it being made. I take issue with in this public forum when it is about matters of public concern for our borough on issues that we're struggling with. All of us are struggling with these issues. So, anyway, I think Tom has something to say.
Yeah, regarding what happened on Tuesday, I said at the time it may have been a mistake for me to bring the gavel down when I did. I think I should have let the conversation go a while before I brought down the gavel. But this was an exchange that was a continuation of an exchange that was really between a member of the public and an assembly person. Now, it referenced a public issue, but it wasn't a public debate going on. It was a private debate between a citizen, and it was a private issue. No one else was raising the issue. Now, is that appropriate comment during public comments? And you know, I haven't yet, and I plan to call some other communities and speak to some other mayors. There's a mayor's conference in Alaska, and this is an issue I want to bring up. Because, you know, the mayor's job is to keep meetings civil and to get them done in the prescribed time by 10 o'clock. That meeting where I gaveled down that exchange, and the exchange that the previous meeting had been a he said, she said. The individual spoke, and then the assembly member spoke, and is that an appropriate forum? We always say during public comment, oh, you're not supposed and during our meetings, we have public comment, then we have assembly comments. And when we open public comment, we say, this is not a time for assembly members to respond. But that happens sometimes. The assembly members would, and it's my job to gavel the assembly member down and say, well, this is not a chance for you to respond. Then after public comments is assembly comments. And what has happened is assembly comments during assembly comments, the assembly sometimes responds to what was said during public comment. So, you know, I have no problem, acknowledging that was a very difficult moment, and I may have made a big mistake. However, I'm also charged with keeping meetings civil and on time. And is that an appropriate use of our time? Perhaps it is. Everyone was curious because I brought the gavel down when I did. Perhaps I should have let it go on and get messy for about a minute before I said, no, this is not, you know, you guys take this outside. This is, we don't want to be here all night on this thing. But Kyle, your first question is, and the way you posed it is dead on. In the context of those meetings, what is said is sometimes incorrect. You're exactly right. The public needs to be able to say things that are factually incorrect, because that's the dialectic of free speech. That is the way we get to the truth sometimes, by saying things that are not true, and someone saying, no, that's not true. You need to correct that. So, you know, that's very much, we've had this discussion down at City Hall because some members of the staff want to correct things that are said during meetings. And I say, can we correct it at the next meeting? Because we don't want to get into, well, you said this and that's not untrue. I mean, we have, as long as I think that the untruths or the stuff that is factually wrong is not being said as a lie, as long as it's an honest error, you know, I don't want to be stopping the meetings to say, well, somebody said the mill rate was 15 and it's 11. You know, we have so much business to do. And we have to allow that free discussion at meetings. This was becoming a dispute between one citizen and an assembly person. Politics in Haines is a barefisted game. Always has been. I don't know why that is. I think Doug has spoken eloquently that we need to somehow try to get the gloves back on, because we take the gloves off right away.
Well, let me ask just one question. I suspect that one of the reasons public comment is limited to 3 minutes is because it doesn't become the back and forth that you're suggesting. What if that individual had his 3 minutes and no one responded? It didn't have to become a fight if there just was no response to it. You're implying that a fight was inevitable, but it doesn't have to be necessarily. And that becomes on individuals, their role in deciding what they're going to turn into a fight or not.
Right. But just in the course of how many times we let that go back and forth as assemblymen get to respond to that. You know, I think that's the reason that during public comment we say direct your comments to the assembly and not to an individual, because we don't want to engage in battles between assembly people and individuals in that room. There's not enough time for the meeting. It's not constructive. It leads to, typically, I agree with Mike, you have to have a back and forth. As the newspaper, when I owned the newspaper, I allowed people to say anything that wasn't libelous, because I believe that people need to vent in this town. The question is, how much venting, or to what level do we allow people to vent at meetings? And Doug is right. You know, you're the referee at a public meeting, and you get the gavel because you get to decide. And there were times that Doug gaveled people down and said, no, that's not appropriate. And there's times that I have to gavel people down because they're either off the subject. Sometimes the assembly is off in left field. You say, wait, can we get back to the motion? It's about trying to do the public's business in a way that's conducive to coming to a solution without destroying the community. That, I'm not defending what I did. I may well have been wrong on Tuesday, but I've also seen high attrition, particularly among younger assembly members who get on there and say, I'm not doing this. When I was growing up, it was a different era. We had a saying as kids, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words may never hurt me. Back then, bullying is when you got beat up, pushed around, spit on. That was bullying. So I'm particularly, on the first go-round on this thing between the citizen and the assembly member, I was just like, hey, let it fly. I'm from a different generation where, hey, as long as they're not punching you physically, you're okay. And I think there's coming into this is, you know, there are new mores. Our culture changes over time. Things don't stay the same. What was acceptable 20, 30 years ago, smoking on airplanes, isn't acceptable now. You know, these things are in constant flux, as well they should be. We're trying to become a more civilized civilization.
I think both of these are super valuable points. And And part of the reason that there's even this question of whether it was appropriate to gavel this individual is because it was a subjective decision. And so inherently, you're going to have people who think you did the right thing or the wrong thing. If this is talking about trying to develop a policy, I guess where I sit now, looking at it from a different side of the mirror than I have in the past, it occurs to me that, like Mike says, this is a limited public forum. And because of that, it occurs to me that potentially in the in-person comment, that the policy of making comments directed to the entire assembly and avoiding personalities is valuable because it's limited on the other side as well. Assembly members are not to address public comments. And so if a public member of the public brings up a policy that's an issue, well, whether I agree with that policy or not, I don't have to get back to that right away. We can address that at the next agenda. If a member of the public gets up and addresses my personal character, it's going to be hard for anybody to not feel attacked and feel like they want to address that and to be able to feel like for the rest of that meeting that they can just let that go and engage in the business of the borough. If, for example, a member of the public wanted to attack my personal actions, that'd be great. I'd want to be able to speak to that and defend that. And in this limited public forum, we've already said that as assembly members, we're not going to engage the public. And so if we are allowing the public to engage individual assembly members, but not have individual assembly members to engage individuals in the public, it's a one-way street that doesn't feel totally fair as far as even in that open dialogue ways. I think in that the written form is the way that we can allow for, one, everything to actually be in the public record that everyone can research and find, but also allow it so that as elected officials, you can have those what could be perceived as personal attacks or critiques or however you want to call it, and be able to address that in a way that protects yourself as well. Whether or not the actual gaveling in this instance was justified or not, again, is a subjective matter because we don't have these policies in place. And I could see both sides of it, particularly depending on how much perspective you have on the issue, on the situation.
So, Kevin, just to follow up on that, so the way I understand what you're saying is if somebody has an issue with the conduct of an assembly person, they need to put that in writing, but they wouldn't be able to, you don't want them to be able to come up and be able to say that at a mic. So anybody that's listening to the meeting or at the meeting, they would have to go online to see any critiques of individual assembly members' actions?
Well, I guess we would have to address both sides if we are going to allow that, would be my argument, is that from what I understand, and I've been told as an assembly member, is that we're not addressing public comments in the meeting. And so if a public comment is directed specifically at me and my character, and in this public venue, we're not allowed to respond to it, I guess whether you're saying that's going to be justified by the law or not, my argument would be that if we want normal, emotionally balanced people to be engaged in this government, then we need to create a safe space and a space where people feel like that their character is safe.
And so I guess the way that I ran meetings is during public comment, say if Mike got up and made a comment about you, you couldn't respond to it during in public comment. But once we got to assembly comment, under assembly comment, assembly members could talk about any issue they wanted to. Just like for me, during public comment, if somebody wanted to read 3 minutes of the Iliad, that would have been a nice break. I probably wouldn't have mind that. It's been a while since I've read it myself. Because there's limited people that want to speak. Yes, it can be used to disrupt a meeting. It can make a meeting go long. Haven't seen that happen yet. But then during assembly comment, any assembly member can speak to whatever topic they want. And I think if the idea for the borough would be to limit any critical comments about assembly members to written only, that would go down a road that I don't think we want to go down.
Yeah, and I totally agree. I see where you're coming from, Kevin. But we got it when we're talking about a borough assembly meeting, we got big chairs and little chairs. You know, you guys have the big chairs and the public has the little chairs, but really, where are the big chairs? I think the little chairs are the big chairs, the citizens, you know, and that's the citizens' time. That's the 3 minutes is a citizen's time. And I agree with the policy on that the assembly members, mayor, everybody just letting the citizens have their say.
And then, as Doug Will said, you do have opportunity. So just write it down. Anything that's in, I think this goes at the heart of civility, giving the citizen their time, uninterrupted. That's civil. And that's very civil on your part as an assembly person to sit there and take it. We may go into this idea of civility, and as the last program, of demonstrating conduct versus a policy. And I think that right there is a demonstrated conduct of civility that we should all aspire to. And then when it's your turn, at the assembly comment period, you could have written down all those things, and they say, okay, I'd like to take issue on a couple of points that were made during public comment. And the way you do that in the assembly comments then demonstrates a further civility. Then now it's your turn, and the citizens have a right to hear your response. And so that's a valuable opportunity. In my belief, we should aspire to that type of debate and exchange, letting that person have their time. And when it comes to those times, like I said, there's Supreme Court cases that say, you know, when it comes to political comment, it can be sharp, it can be robust. Is what they're, and even with word choice, there's a case, Cohen versus California, where in the late 60s, a guy came into a courthouse and he had a leather jacket, and on the back of the jacket, it had the F word, the draft, F the draft. He walked in, a lady and her kid, I think it was, saw that jacket, and they were offended by it. But he went into a courtroom, took off the jacket, and sat there, and he was sitting there peacefully. Well, look, they ended up arresting him based on the woman's offense in that public space with that word on the back of that jacket. And that went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the mere utterance of that four-letter word can be used in a political speech. That was a political statement, F the draft. But however, in this context, in a public meeting, if I said that same word and said F you and pointed at you, that's a threatening way to use that word. And then at that point, that should be gaveled down. That is not protected by the First Amendment. And I think Tom mentioned a generational thing, a generational element to this. As times change, generation change. We've seen this on university campuses as well. Where it used to be, when I went to university, you know, I mean, it was no holds barred, you know, speakers. I went to speakers to hear speakers, and they did not agree with them at all, and they were very challenging and controversial issues. Well, nowadays, there has been a movement to, you can't have those speakers, those type of speakers that offend you. You can't be offended. I don't know about that. I think that's what the First Amendment. I want to be challenged with my ideas. I want to be challenged with what I said in the past. If I'm an assembly member and I said that, I need to be challenged on it, and I have to be able to look inside myself. Was I wrong? And I think Tom is, you know, is looking at his actions at the last meeting, and he's thinking, was I right or was I wrong? And we don't know. We're trying to find that answer out here, but. I think that challenging aspect, and in a public comment at public meetings, when a citizen is addressing their assembly, their government, and their right to speak, and their right to petition their government on something, and the other citizen's right to hear that sometimes has to be challenged. It can be sharp and directed, and I think the way you all handle it as assembly person can create that civility. Let them have their time, and then write it down, and then address it at assembly comment.
Yeah, I appreciate those comments, Mike. I guess, you know, what happens is everything is a precedent that hasn't happened before, right? But we basically say, well, the assembly, you have to take this on the chin. And so the assembly now says, well, I'm going to get back at you during assembly comments. So, you know, we had a fairness doctrine in this country at one time. We got rid of it. And maybe you could say the Yeah, and the Fairness Doctrine said that if a person said something on the airwaves, a person of the opposing view would have the opportunity to respond to it. And maybe, and that was taken away, and thus the rise of Rush Limbaugh and far-right radio, which didn't have to provide a forum for people of opposing views. It was on the books for 40 years before the Reagan administration took it off. So I guess you could look at this allowing the public to take on individual assembly members and assembly members responding as part of our new dialectic. But it's going to be, if that in fact becomes the norm, we're going to have a lot longer assembly meetings, and people better not be expecting us to get out of there at 10 o'clock. My decision to gavel the individual last week probably was the wrong decision, and it might have been the right decision at the time. My brain is big enough to entertain both those ideas at once, which is to try to move the borough assembly through the borough's business in a respectful, timely manner. And I think the former mayor can appreciate that. I think the former mayor used to open public comment by saying, this is not the time to address individuals, but to address, or don't direct your comments to individuals, but to the assembly as a whole. And I think that's going to be how I preface public comments into the future. But, you know, we have, again, we have all kinds of free speech rights. And democracy is glorious chaos. It's the nature of the beast to allow, for most of human history, we didn't allow people to say whatever they wanted. We had kings that would hang you if you said those things. But I'm trying to, I guess, limit the chaos.
Is the length of meeting argument, though, that too many people are getting up and having their 3 minutes, or that the assembly discussions are lasting too long? My understanding is that, like, Robert's Rules of Order confines a subject to be spoken about no more than twice by any one member. And so what I've heard, you know, when people are critical of a meeting's going too long, is that the assembly discussion is just sort of repetitive and taking up too much time, not like 20 people are lining up for their 3 minutes mm-hmm. of public. I don't understand how, because we limit the time for public comment, how is that making it go too long?
Well, I'll tell you, until 2016, there was only one public comment period at the beginning of the meeting. As a member of the assembly, I pushed to have the second public comment period on the meeting so people could comment on how the assembly acted during the course of the meeting. And actually, if they have one or the other, I would say maybe the second one's more important because you actually get to see what the assembly did. So I think we're very generous in our public hearing opportunities, public comment opportunities, and rightfully so, because people in Haines have a lot to say. We do ask a lot of our public leaders, and we have very few returning public leaders, let me say that. And that's a problem we should all think about.
And just a little pushback, Mayor Morfitt. I'd always start just saying this is for a topic for public comment. It's any topic that's not on the agenda. And the only time I would remind somebody that it needs to be addressed to the assembly is if they turned around and talked to the audience. And so if they're turned around, because they're not, a lot of people want to talk to their friends that are behind them to make a point, and that the comments need to be directed to the assembly. Mm-hmm. If they wanted to say, I mean, there's times that I was literally shaking, trying not to react to public comment when it's directly at my own personal character and ethics. But you let it happen. That's somebody's viewpoint. And it was never an issue of attacking on assembly members that made any meeting go long. Public comments, the only time there was extensive public comments over the 3 years that I was there was when it was a hot topic item on the agenda or something was coming up. And then you had a lot of public comments before and after. And you said we're going to be setting something new with this way. I disagree, because for the 3 years that I was on there, it was 3 minutes for public comment, unlimited comment for assembly members. And that was kind of how we let people respond to somebody in the audience. If they had attacked them, they can correct the record. Or a lot of assembly members decided that, you know, that's their opinion and I'm just going to take it and I'll talk to them later. Some of them wanted to respond in public, some of them didn't. And I think you can have a cohesive meeting and by still allowing them to have those viewpoints. And getting back to what you said a little bit earlier about bullying in the past, I'm not condoning this. I'm not suggesting we go back this way. But 100 and some years ago, if somebody had a disagreement about what somebody said with them, they'd challenge them to a duel, and it'd be at dawn or whatever with pistols and swords, and you'd work it out then. And then it got to be like you were saying, when you were growing up, somebody said something you didn't like, you punched them. Now you've got a lot of people on social media that, and as you were talking about with our news organizations, a lot of them are segmented towards a certain audience, and they're pushing narratives, and people are able to sit in a TV studio, say whatever they want about somebody, however harmful, there's no recourse. People can sit at home on their laptop and type out whatever they want. They know they're not going to get punched in the nose like they might have in the schoolyard back in the day. They know there's not going to be any kind of repercussions. Their friends are going to cheer them. The people that disagree with them, they don't care about the people that disagree with them, because we're kind of getting more and more siloed. And so it's, how do we move out of that, that there are consequences for the people that aren't using public, the forum and the First Amendment in the most productive manner, while still protecting that? Because I've always looked at the First Amendment as, I'm going to protect the speech that I find most vile and disgusting, because if they start limiting that, at what point is somebody going to come after something that I want to say?
Oh, yeah. I think you said something critical here, a couple of points. You mentioned the word viewpoint a couple of times. And it's a challenging job that you all have taken on as assembly people and mayors when a citizen stands up. And sometimes a lot of times they're going to have viewpoint. They're going to represent a viewpoint that doesn't align with what you may believe, or sometimes what the whole room believes. I've been in the full assembly chamber when one person stood up, poor booger, and he said something that the whole room and everybody wanted to go one way with this project, this borough project, and he was gavel down, and I stood up. And you have to. So viewpoint, this is the idea of viewpoint discrimination. That is one of the most egregious forms of content discrimination there is in the First Amendment world, is that idea of viewpoint discrimination, and government handling one viewpoint differently than another viewpoint in this limited public forum. And I think Doug expressed it pretty well when he said, I'm going to protect the speech that I find vile and disgusting, because if they come down on that, where are they going to come down on it? That's a challenge. And it goes, when we had the town forum up the highway, Tom, I asked you about the powers of the mayor, and one of the powers is the power of the gavel. And this is that whole idea of what that power of the gavel, and how will the gavel be used, and the viewpoint. It's like, will a person, and it's challenging for all of us, handle someone speaking and they're getting applause versus someone speaking and people are booing, you know, there's an element of viewpoint discrimination there as well. It's how you handle the crowd when a person's speaking as well. Do you allow the people clapping, but take issue to the people booing?
We haven't had boos and cheers yet. Those are always gaveled down for the sake of decorum. But I do think that, you know, I'll probably continue to say, please avoid personal attacks, because it leads to an escalation of emotions that is not necessary. One, a personal attack is rarely necessary at a meeting. And there are other forums. If you want to take a personal attack, you can take out an ad in the paper and write just about anything that's not libelous against a person. There are other places. We're not shutting down speech in the Valley when we insist on civil discourse at meetings. And, you know, I'll probably say, please avoid. And again, here's the language. Avoid, right? I'm asking. I'm not saying you cannot make a personal attack. I'm saying this is a room where we put a certain kind of behavior down, where we settle down a little bit, and talk about facts and talk about issues, and we try not to talk about personalities because that's not productive. So,
if I could say one other thing here, again, I'm taking it from this one little snapshot on the audio, but in this traditional public forum, if it's libelous, you know, that libelous speech can be gaveled down. So if there's something that's libelous to give rises to that level, just because it's a sharp attack doesn't mean it's libelous. But if it got to the point of libel and all that kind of stuff, that's not protected within the forum. So anyway.
Go ahead, Kevin.
I guess what I'm hearing is that we've identified that this is a limited public forum. We've identified that there's limits on the speech. There's a time limit. We're going to prevent libelous speech. We're going to prevent threatening speech. And so it occurs to me that the productive way that we could continue this forward is to actually have a policy that defines what and what is not allowed according to the public, what we agree on. That feels like an uncomfortable discussion to come to. And I think there's going to be totally different perspectives. And having that discussion, I mean, my mind changes over the course of a discussion. I think I have nuanced understandings even after this discussion. And having conversations with people from different viewpoints is how we come across a policy that potentially represents where people want to be. And taking the time to do that is the only way that we have a policy that then can be upheld in an objective manner. So that when we move forward, we can say, no, well, this is about the policy that we've all taken the time to understand and agree on, as opposed to, well, this was a subjective action from someone that I don't agree with, and they're on the other side of the aisle.
I want to jump in with that because Tom talked about precedent earlier. There's a lot of precedent on what is and isn't allowable speech. So I think that it would behoove, I know that the GAS committee is going to discuss an anti-bullying policy coming. I think the more we can learn about how the Supreme Court has ruled in the past on what kind of speech is allowable and not, what other courts have ruled. In preparing for this, I looked up a bunch of different legal instances where, and this is across the country, Haynes is not alone with these issues. But in Ohio, some members of the public criticized municipal staff. They got gaveled down, and that was ruled that the municipality violated the Open Meetings Act because of that. There's another county in Michigan who tried to have a speech code that regulated vulgarity. That was too broad, too subjective. They retracted that policy. So I think we really need to understand concretely, and we can. Part of the reason the First Amendment exists is to protect from this subjectivity that we've all been talking about. Because when someone else is on the gavel, and their subjective view is that this is bullying or this is creating an unsafe space, well, we need to define what that is. And I think a lot of those definitions already exist, and we just need to. We're not reinventing the wheel here. There's hundreds of years, maybe, of discussions about what we're talking about right now. That's my two cents. Yeah.
So as you guys start working on a policy, I would suggest you look at the poster that's on the borough assembly chambers wall already that I don't know when it up there, the Think one. Is it true? Is it helpful? Is it inspiring? Is it necessary? Is it kind? I think that's a great, it's sitting right up there. Maybe we need to make that bigger. Maybe we need to put more of them up there. Maybe we need to put it behind the mayor so everybody in the audience looks at it. Maybe put one at the back of the room so everybody in the assembly sees it. But I think that's a good starting point right there. It's the enforcement that I think is the issue, and how do you get people to do that? Because I think that is a good policy start right there for the assembly. And one last thing before we finish up here, I just want to let people know that as Kyle and I were putting this together, we were looking at trying to get different viewpoints. And I know we have a broad range of thoughts on this subject, but we did reach out to several other individuals that declined to be on here that we thought might have had a different point of view. So if people want to speak on some of these issues going forward, we'd be happy to have you. And I'd like to thank you guys for showing up and actually being willing to have this conversation with us.
One thing to take away on here is, you know, like Kyle said, we're not alone. other communities are struggling with this stuff as well. We're all trying. And I tell people all the time, you know, just like a lawyer practices law and a doctor practices medicine, we're practicing government. And we're not experts by any means. We need to recognize that. When someone makes a mistake or a perceived mistake, in this case, possibly a gavel, who knows, maybe, it's okay. We're practicing government, and we're gonna make some mistakes, all of us, as citizens as well. And we need to. But we need to get to the point where I can have a 180-degree difference of opinion from the person sitting across the table from me in a coffee shop, and we can put an issue on the table, and we can discuss that issue, and the person can say, I don't agree here, and I don't agree here, and we can have a spirited debate about that. Then we walk up, we get up, and we're friends again. We gotta get to that place again.
Okay, thanks for listening to this edition of Lincoln Canal Voice. There are certainly points we missed and angles we didn't explore, so we want to hear from you. If you have ideas or opinions about what we discussed today or have something to add, KHNS offers listeners the opportunity to record personal commentary here in the studio that we will broadcast on the air. Those interested in expressing their views on this show or another topic can call 766-2020 or email khns@khns.org to get more information on how to do so. And finally, if you have an idea that you'd like to hear discussed or debated in this forum, please call or email suggestions for topics and guests. Have a great day. Thanks again for listening. Listening to KHNS, Haynes, Skagway, and Clequan.